War Room Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Hey, welcome to War Room Impeachment. My name is Raheem Kassam. It is 27th October, the year of our Lord, 2019. This is episode 7 of the War Room Impeachment show, an exclusive new show, I guess, over the last week. Just been bringing this to you since last Monday. We obviously have big breaking news that's coming out of the White House in just a moment. We're going to try and take a live stream from the White House there. I'm live from the Breitbart Embassy on Capitol Hill here in Washington, D.C. We have Stephen K. Bannon, the usual host of this show, on assignment in New York. Jason Miller also on assignment today. Everyone's working very hard to bring you guys the latest and the best, most intricate details of what's going on with the Nancy Pelosi, Adam Schiff impeachment of the President of the United States. That's not taking a break itself, so we're not taking a break either. They had more depositions yesterday on Capitol Hill. And we're going to be bringing you all the information about that. We are live on the John Fredericks Radio Network and all the regular podcast platforms. You can find us at warroom.org. As I say, big breaking news last night. The White House is believed to be announcing that the ISIS leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, is dead after a U.S. special operations raid. We're just waiting for the president to come out and speak. You've got the framing in the White House right now in the diplomacy room with the nation's army, navy, Marine Corps, all the flags. So it looks like a pretty big deal. Stick with us. We're going to have a live stream for you there. I want to see if we've got our regular host, Stephen K. Bannon, with us. Do we have Steve on the line? I don't think we have Steve just quite yet.
Yeah, this is Steve right here.
Oh, here we go, Steve. Steve, a little bit early for us today on the War Room Impeachment show. It just means we've got more time to dissect this stuff that's been taking place over the last few days, which is welcome as far as I'm concerned. Steve, just want to talk about this briefing that we're expecting any moment now before we cut into it. This was announced very late last night. It was announced, as we've come to expect, on the president's Twitter feed about 9:23 p.m. last night. He announces to the nation via Twitter that there is something big and exciting has happened. Nobody knew originally what it was, but the news started to drip out over the course of the next couple of minutes immediately after that this may be the death of the Islamic State leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. When Osama bin Laden was killed, correct me if I'm wrong, they cut into all the news, all the sports, anything that was on the television almost immediately for the Obama announcement. Not so the case here, and I'm sure a lot of Astros fans are happy that they didn't cut in late last night. But do you have any insight onto what might have?
Well, first of all, I do think it's smart of the president to do it this morning. You know, last night was obviously the game and other things are going on. It's pretty late to get the nation, particularly on a Saturday night. I do think it is smart to do it this morning. I think it shows you also. I mean, this is a way to not only make a major announcement to the nation, but it's also a way to bigfoot the Sunday shows. I mean, one of the things we've been saying here on War Room Impeachment is about a more aggressive strategy of on the communication side from the White House, not just taking punches, but start to give punches. And, you know, there's been all these rumors about bringing in more communications people. But, Raheem, I think it's very important, particularly I think today it's once again, I think Kellyanne Conway is on Fox News Sunday at noon. But other than that, I don't think there's any administration people, or I didn't see any administration people actually going out on the Sunday shows. And for our audience, people have to remember these Sunday shows, although most people in Trump country are at church, are, you know, tending to family matters in secular Washington, D.C., the Sunday shows are high church. Right, and it's kind of the railhead that drives the messaging. So do you see this? As I want to welcome everybody, and I'm actually in New York. I'll be doing media for the next couple of days and participating in War Room remotely as Raheem and Jason anchor this. But Raheem, do you agree that this is also a way to bigfoot the Sunday shows?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you summarized that, because, like you said, the Sunday shows are really the meat on the bones of a lot of the stories that don't get the coverage that they necessarily don't get the deep dive that they necessarily want to get to in the week, because it's just a constant breaking news cycle. Everybody's constantly got their heads on a swivel all week. We've got now, you know, they have the opportunity on Sundays to do more unpacking things. Usually, you know, the MSNBCs and the CNNs, they do more opinionizing. You get the Fareed Zakaria brings in far more, you know, foreign analysis, all that kind of stuff. And that's where not just they summarize what happened over the last week, but they also tee up for the next week exactly what's going on.
They set the narrative framework for the week to come.
And that's exactly what we're going to be doing with these Sunday shows as well on War Room Impeachment, because there's so much going on all week, every week now, and there will be, you know, until Christmas, maybe past Christmas, Steve. And
well, we're talking about scheduling in a second, but yes, I think that's why it's so important. I think for the White House to start leaning into these Sunday shows. Look, you had Mick Mulvaney, you know, had a very rough time at Fox last week. Chris Wallace really beat him up. But I think the White House got to get more aggressive on the Sunday shows. You know, more bookings, more people, and I think some of the rumors around town about communication changes, or at least not to change the communication department, but to have at least some people focus on impeachment, would be very welcome. And I think you're seeing the first start of a more aggressive communications department, Raheem, in doing this this morning at 9 o'clock and bringing in the nation. The question I have for you, Raheem, is it looks like all cable covering this? There was some controversy last night about who would actually cover this and cover it live on Sunday morning.
I think we've seen now, for the last year, 18 months, that when President Trump gets up and he gives a rally speech, everybody used to cover the whole things. They're great for ratings, as we know. But as they moved from being 40 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, and an hour and 15 minutes, maybe even longer sometimes, a lot of the networks started cutting away after the first even 5-10 minutes, just then going, President Trump is giving a rally in wherever it is. You know what he's going to say. We're going to get back to attacking him on other things. And they just cut away. And I think Fox has been one of the only networks that has covered it. But even Fox, I think, in recent months has started to shift away from full live coverage. Because remember, if you're Fox News, let's say you've got the Laura Ingraham show in the evening. You've got all the guests planned. Maybe you've got some pre-recorded segments. You've got everything going. If the president comes up there and speaks for an hour and a half, it cuts one and a half of your shows fully away. And so there's question marks over this one today, because this isn't a campaign rally. This isn't tub thumping. This is an address from the commander-in-chief of the nation, ostensibly about something that is a very, very significant national security development. And so I think and I hope, I mean, we have CNN up here, as you know, Steve, in the war room. We like to, you know, it's the in nosce hostem mindset, know thy enemy. We will have, I hope, the whole live stream in front of us. But, you know, if we have to switch over to Fox,
there's a little bit of breaking news. They're reporting right now that the president is actually going to speak at 9:10, which will be in about a minute. Some of the ABC correspondent, I think, that's there live from the local ABC, Steve Herman, is just tweeting that. Looks like it's going to begin closer to 9:10. We'll cut into that. Is the White House live stream up? We can pick this up, Raheem. If it is, we will cut in live to the president's remarks. Raheem, besides setting the media narrative, what about this raid in and of itself in the impeachment process? Remember, here at War Room Impeachment on the John Fredericks Radio Network and all your podcast platforms, and you go to warroom.org to see the continual update. We want to be the center for all your information in concise form about impeachment. This ties into Syria. This ties into Turkey. This ties into the controversy we've had over the last month about the America First strategy in the Middle East. I think it's true, at least, that the Kurds are tweeting out. Am I not correct, Raheem, that they were a major participant? The Iraqi Kurds were a major participant in this military operation.
About 4 hours ago, we found out that the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF, had hailed a quote-unquote successful joint operation with the United States. I'll read the quote from Mazlum Abdi. The successful and historic operation due to joint intelligence work with the United States of America. That's the commander-in-chief of the Kurdish forces in Syria, tweeted early on Sunday. And this links back a lot to what's going on, what we're hearing about the impeachment stuff. Remember, for the audience out there who's kind of, you know, you may not be following this, you know, in the detail, in the weeds as much as we are. That's why we want to bring you this show, make it easy for you to consume this and know exactly what's going on. But a lot of this stuff comes down to whether or not the president is acting appropriately on the world stage. And that's why the Washington, D.C. bubble, the Brookings institutions, all of these historic think tanks get their heads blown up over Trump's withdrawal from Syria, I suppose you could call it, or change in tack on Syria in the last couple of weeks, because they want to draw this all together. He's not fit for office, they say. He's not, you know, comporting himself with the mannerisms and the policies that have been established for 20, 30, 40 years as far as it concerns U.S. foreign policy. And so this is a shift, and I think you're right, Steve, in saying that, you know, the White House has seen over the last 5-6 days now, especially since last Monday. I don't know what happened last Monday, but something happened last Monday. It seems to kick a few people.
I think that may be. Of course, we don't shroud ourselves in glory, but that may be the start of the.
I'm crediting you. I'm not crediting
you. But I think this. I think it was a sea change across Capitol Hill. The show being one part of it, but finally, people that are allies of the President of the United States, allies of this Trump movement, whether that's Mark Meadows, whether it's Congressman Matt Gaetz, whether it's other people, often people like Lindsey Graham that put the proposal out to the Senate. Across the board this past week was the inflection point where finally the Trump forces said enough is enough. This current strategy is not working. We just can't sit there and take punches, but we've got to be more aggressive. And I think, Raheem, I think you bring up the central point that we're going to develop over the next 6 to 10 weeks, because remember, ladies and gentlemen, this show is only a temporary show. We're going to be up every day, 7 days a week, from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. live on the John Frederick Radio Networks and other affiliates as we pick them up. But also you can get it 24 hours a day on warroom.org. That's War Room Impeachment. And we're only staying on air until the day after the acquittal of Donald J. Trump, which we'll do a summary show. But Raheem, you make the central point that's coming out this week and is now being highlighted. This is really a policy difference between, and we're not deep state people, or at least I'm not a deep state person, but it's between the apparatus and the bureaucracy of the post-war international rules-based order, of which the United States has shouldered the entire burden of this now for 40 or 50 years. And this is why we have a $1 trillion defense budget. This is why we have a $1 trillion deficit. This is why, you know, you have the deplorables kids, whether on the 38th parallel up at in Korea, on the ships in the South China Sea on patrol, whether in the Persian Gulf, the forward deployed troops in Saudi Arabia, those kids in the Hindu Kush on patrol today in Afghanistan, or those in Syria and Iraq. This is a difference in policy. It's a fundamental difference. We're not saying it's not. That should be debated. That's what democracy is about. But when somebody's appointed an elected commander-in-chief, he's commander-in-chief. And this has been as Raheem, and I think as we're going to go through testimony, summary testimony the past week and forecast testimony this coming week, I mean, it's pretty clear, pretty evident of what you just said, that this is a fundamental policy difference, and they're trying to turn it into an impeachable offense.
Cameras are moving here on the lectern, so we should be joined by the President of the United States from the White House any moment.
So, Raheem, for audience, just summarize what's going on last night for this raid, why it's important, why it ties to Syria, and ladies and gentlemen, this ties centrally to this entire debate, and I think it's why it's so smart from a media perspective that the President is addressing the nation this morning live throughout the country. Raheem, talk about the raid. Why is the raid important, particularly as it relates to this, what we've heard on the impeachment testimony so far?
Well, just to link it back to something else and link it back to the furore over what happened with the Syria announcement just a couple of weeks ago, Steve, remember everybody and their dog was going on television and saying, look, if Trump does this, that means ISIS is definitely going to come back. You know, they still have their command and control in some areas. They still have their leader alive. He's been reported injured or dead several times, remember, and it always turned out to be a false alarm or mistake or whatever it was, this is a major moment in terms of that narrative, in terms of destroying that narrative, to say that, look, you know, just because we don't have these troops in this corridor in the north of Syria, that doesn't mean that the U.S. is still not determined to destroy and dismantle ISIS in its entirety, right? And President Trump's always been clear about that. The skepticism that's been levied and lobbed his way by the talking heads on television and radio over the last couple of months is continuously proved to be untrue. And where it links back to impeachment is this. You know, we were talking earlier in the week, and everybody, if you want to catch up with the week's shows, you know, they're all on the site, warroom.org. You've got to listen to every single one of them, because there is a whole narrative that's being told by the Democrats right now, that's being told by the media right now, and there's very little on the Republican side, or has been up until now on the Republican side, pushing back against this. We're telling you the story, not just from the other side. We like to think that we're being completely truthful about the things we're saying, so you be the judges of this. But Steve, as it pertains to the impeachment inquiry, the president, as we mentioned earlier in this week, Clinton's White House, when Clinton was being impeached, he got on with the business of government. One of the key things that Lanny Davis and all those guys around him, his lawyer and all those guys around him in his White House, they were keen to show that while this was going on, while the Republicans were running around trying to do this, you know, political chicanery as they thought of it, the president was still focusing on keeping the country safe, keeping the economy going, doing the things that a president is supposed to do. And this, Steve, is a moment where this White House can point to Trump and say he is concerning himself with the business of government.
Yeah, 100%. You know, as Commander-in-Chief, overseeing and authorizing a raid, I also think one of the things we're trying to do here on War Room impeachment on the John Fredericks radio network, you can go to warroom.org and get all the current information, a summary of the news and analysis by Raheem and others. Is I think from a media context, we always try to be able to frame it for you, to be able to how to think about it. And I think this ties back into this whole, you know, you've had career people, you've had Ambassador Taylor, you've had Assistant Secretaries of Defense Cooper, mm-hmm. You've had Ambassador Sondland, you've had all these people, either political appointees like the Ambassador Sondland, or you've had career diplomats now testify, and you're getting the perspective of the official apparatus, right? And this is in conflict with what President Trump's trying to do as far as America First national security policy and America First foreign policy. And here today, I think you're seeing the merging together of both those elements, and that the big controversy about Syria, the big controversy about the Kurds. It shouldn't be lost on people that the Kurds are taking at least co-credit for the intelligence part of the operation, and it looks like the Iraqi Kurds, who had the plebiscite, remember, Raheem, they had a plebiscite in 2017. They've been our allies for many, many decades. But the Iraqi Kurds had a plebiscite, a referendum in September of 17, I think, where they voted, it was something like 90% to split off and to form an independent Kurdistan or independent Kurdish homeland. Out of Iraq. That was not pushed by Secretary Tillerson. It was not really pushed by the administration. But I think it was the beginning of all this controversy that we've had with our Kurdish allies in the Middle East. What I really like about what they're doing now, Raheem, is that they're stretching this out at the White House to make sure they really are going to Bigfoot. You know, President Trump, I'm sure, is really going to Bigfoot the Sunday shows.
Steve, 9 a.m. Eastern time is the time, right? Everyone's got their coffee. You know, nice fall weather. They're curled up on their couches here in Washington, D.C. They're waiting to see, you know, what Adam Schiff has to say, what Nancy Pelosi has to say, to take their marching orders here in the liberal city of Washington, D.C. Over impeachment. But the White House is now 20 minutes into this, 20 minutes late for this conference, and the suspense is building. And you know, Trump knows suspense, Trump knows showmanship, and you know, the CNN has now had the empty microphone up there for the last 20 minutes. What would usually be prime time, State of the Union, their show, State of the Union, every Sunday. And they are, you can see, becoming annoyed about it, because the Chiron switch, the bottom third of the screen switched from President Trump to address the nation a minute ago, Steve, to Adam Schiff was not briefed on the al-Baghdadi situation.
Oh no!
Here we go, Steve. We're gonna cut in here. I think. I hope we can have a live stream. President Trump is about to address the nation, ladies and gentlemen. Over to President Trump from the White House. I think we're just waiting on that stream to start. getting. He hasn't started speaking yet, so we're not.
We're going to pick up the live stream.
We're not witnessing anything just yet, but technical issues sometimes when you you're hosting the show from three different locations at any one given time. But stick with us, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be with it very shortly. Steve, just before we get to the president, on something like this, would the president be expected by the press corps to take questions after this, or is this just one of those things where he goes out there, says what happened, and then boom, cuts out?
I think that for the drama of it, in the sense, I would just make it a report to the nation, and I would recommend not take questions. But President Trump, as you know, is a field player. I think he'll feel the room and decide. I will guarantee you, though, I think
last
that if a question,
the United States,
Steve, we're just gonna. Go right to the president.
World's number one terrorist leader to justice. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is dead. He was the founder and leader of ISIS, the most ruthless and violent terror organization anywhere in the world. The United States has been searching for Baghdadi for many years. Capturing or killing Baghdadi has been the top national security priority of my administration. U.S. Special Operations Forces executed a dangerous and daring nighttime raid in northwestern Syria and accomplished their mission in grand style. The U.S. personnel were incredible. I got to watch much of it. No personnel were lost in the operation, while a large number of Baghdadi's fighters and companions were killed with him. He died after running into a dead-end tunnel, whimpering and crying and screaming all the way. The compound had been cleared by this time, with people either surrendering or being shot and killed. 11 young children were moved out of the house and are uninjured. The only ones remaining were Baghdadi in the tunnel, and he had dragged three of his young children with him. They were led to certain death. He reached the end of the tunnel as our dogs chased him down. He ignited his vest, killing himself and the three children. His body was mutilated by the blast. The tunnel had caved in on it in addition. But test results gave certain, immediate, and totally positive identification. It was him. The thug who tried so hard to intimidate others spent his last moments in utter fear, in total panic and dread, terrified of the American forces bearing down on him. We were in the compound for approximately 2 hours, and after the mission was accomplished, we took highly sensitive material and information from the raid, much having to do with ISIS, origins, future plans, things that we very much want. Baghdadi's demise demonstrates America's relentless pursuit of terrorist leaders and our commitment to the enduring and total defeat of ISIS and other terrorist organizations. Our reach is very long. As you know, last month we announced that we recently killed Hamza bin Laden, the very violent son of Osama bin Laden, who was saying very bad things about people, about our country, about the world. He was the heir apparent to Al-Qaeda. Terrorists who oppress and murder innocent people should never sleep soundly, knowing that we will completely destroy them. These savage monsters will not escape their fate, and they will not escape the final judgment of God. Baghdadi has been on the run for many years, long before I took office. But in my direction as Commander-in-Chief of the United States, We obliterated his caliphate 100% in March of this year. Today's events are another reminder that we will continue to pursue the remaining ISIS terrorists to their brutal end. That also goes for other terrorist organizations. They are likewise in our sights. Baghdadi and the losers who worked for him, and losers they are, they had no idea what they were getting into. In some cases, they were very frightened puppies. In other cases, they were hardcore killers. But they killed many, many people. Their murder of innocent Americans, James Foley, Stephen Sotloff, Peter Kasich, and Kayla Mueller were especially heinous. The shocking publicized murder of Jordanian pilot, a wonderful young man, spoke to the king of Jordan. They all knew him. They all loved him. He was burned alive in a cage for all to see on the execution of Christians in Libya and Egypt, as well as the genocidal mass murder of Yazidis, rank ISIS among the most depraved organizations in the history of our world. The forced religious conversions, the orange suits prior to so many beheadings, all of which were openly displayed for the world to see. This was all that Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, this is what he wanted. This is what he was proud of. He was a sick and depraved man, and now he's gone. Baghdadi was vicious and violent, and he died in a vicious and violent way as a coward, running and crying. This raid was impeccable and could only have taken place with the acknowledgement and help of certain other nations and people. I want to thank the nations of Russia, Turkey, Syria, and Iraq, and I also want to thank the Syrian Kurds for certain support they were able to give us. This was a very, very dangerous mission. Thank you as well to the great intelligence professionals who helped make this very successful journey possible. I want to thank the soldiers and sailors, airmen and Marines involved in last night's operation. You are the very best there is anywhere in the world. No matter where you go, there is nobody even close. I want to thank General Mark Milley and our Joint Chiefs of Staff. And I also want to thank our professionals who work in other agencies of the United States government and were critical to the mission's unbelievable success. Last night was a great night for the United States and for the world. A brutal killer, one who has caused so much hardship and death, has violently been eliminated. He will never again harm another innocent man, woman, or child. He died like a dog. He died like a coward. The world is now a much safer place. God bless America. Thank you. Any questions?
When did you first hear about that this was an operation we were going to get started?
We've had him under surveillance for a couple of weeks. We knew a little bit about where he was going, where he was heading. We had very good information that he was going to another location. He didn't go. Two or three efforts were canceled because he decided to change his mind, constantly changing his mind. And finally, we saw that he was here, held up here. We knew something about the compound. We knew it had tunnels. The tunnels were dead end for the most part. There was one we think that wasn't, but we had that covered, too, just in case. The level of intelligence, the level of work was pretty amazing. When we landed with 8 helicopters, a large crew of brilliant fighters ran out of those helicopters and blew holes into the side of the building, not wanting to go through the main door because that was booby-trapped. And there was something, it was something really amazing to see. I got to watch it along with General Milley, Vice President Pence, others in the Situation Room. And we watched it so clearly. Well, I don't want to say how, but we had absolutely perfect, as though you were watching a movie. It was that and the technology there alone is really great. A big part of the trip that was of great danger was the it was approximately an hour and 10-minute flight, and we were flying over very, very dangerous territory. In fact, some of our leaders said that that could be the most dangerous flying in and flying out. And that's why last night we were so quiet about it. We didn't say anything, and I didn't make my remark until after they had landed safely in a certain area.
You're listening to the President.
But the flight in, the flight out was
now taking questions from the White House about the killing of the ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. Back to the President.
Russia treated us great. They opened up. We had to fly over certain Russia areas, Russia-held areas. Russia was great. Iraq was excellent. We really had great cooperation. And you have to understand, they didn't know what we were doing and where we were going exactly. But the ISIS fighters are hated as much by Russia and some of these other countries as they are by us. And that's why I say they should start doing a lot of the fighting now, and they'll be able to. I really believe they'll be able to. Yes, Jennifer?
So can you say what role the Kurds played in this, generally?
They gave us not a military role at all, but they gave us some information that turned out to be helpful, the Kurds.
Can you tell us what the role of Turkey might have been in Iraq?
Who?
What was the role of Turkey?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is the President of the United States from the White House this morning discussing the raid on Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. We're going to have more on that. I want to bring Stephen K. Banner back in here. Steve, what do you make of
one thing I think people should keep in mind, let's go back to his inaugural address on the very first day of his administration. He, you know, as soon as he took the oath of office, in his inaugural address, he said, "We will form a new alliances," and I quote, "We will form new alliances and rejuvenate old ones, and we will unite the civilized world to eradicate radical Islamic terrorism from the face of the earth." Now, when he wrote that at Mar-a-Lago in December of 2016, you know, his advisors, myself included, said that's a pretty big check that you're writing the urn of the cash. His number one focus, and this is why General Mattis was brought in as Secretary of Defense, and this is one of the things I don't think that the permanent political class, particularly national security, regime, fully understood, is that when Trump focuses on something, it gets done. He made it a high priority to destroy the physical caliphate,
yes,
of ISIS that really had between Mosul and Raqqa. Remember, Raheem, we used to talk about this all the time, is that they were actually a more vibrant, robust state,
yep,
than either Syria or Iraq at the time. They had 8 million people enslaved. They had the oil fields that Trump talks about today. They had an active, vibrant network. And you see in this that President Trump made it a priority. And that's why it's not just a big day for the Trump administration, but for the world, as President Trump has now talked about finally getting the leader. Raheem, why don't you give the audience, because this is really tied into the impeachment process now, because you can tell that, as Raheem has been talking about, this is a policy difference, really, about a direction. How on the world stage, particularly in Europe and the rest of the world, the Middle East, how big is al-Baghdadi? How big a character is it, particularly in relationship to Osama bin Laden?
Yeah. Look, al-Baghdadi, very much seen as the inheritor of the Islamist, the radical fundamentalist Islamist, whatever you want to call it, throne that, that Osama bin Laden left the vacuum of when he was also killed in a, in another, as we heard this morning, daring and dangerous nighttime raid. There is reason to believe, at least I have reason to believe, you know, my job is to try and unpack these things. The reason a lot of these career political, career bureaucrats, and we've mostly seen career bureaucrats going to testify on Capitol Hill in the last couple of days, Steve, the reason they get so het up about what the president is doing, about the foreign policy agenda that he's pursuing, about what kind of, you know, how he comports himself is almost as important to these people as what he's getting done. Is that
no, he's an offense to, first off, the deplorables having a say-so in this is an offense to them. But he's clearly an offense to them just the way he, you can even tell in this talk right here, in this address to the nation. You know, President Trump, as is his style, is going to go in and give you some details. In addition, because of his understanding of mass communication, he is ridiculing and diminishing what these people stand for. He understands that this will be broadcast over many, many platforms throughout the world, and he wants to, he believes that in the way he thinks about media and communications, that calling them losers, calling them cowards, calling them that, reverberates.
Yes.
And has a message to their potential fighters, has a message to young people throughout the region and through the world. So that's why his style, and I know that style in and of itself offends some of the what they used to call the striped pants set at the State Department.
Right. But more importantly, just than that, Steve, just to conclude, his style of doing things is also showing to work. And that's more dangerous for these guys. You see, they would be okay with it if this guy comes into office, you know, in their words, clowns around for a bit, but then they have to tidy the stuff up behind the scenes. That's not what's happening here. We're seeing that today with the killing of al-Baghdadi. I just want to highlight something. As the president said, whimpering, crying, and screaming into a tunnel. Now, obviously, that's some language that I think is unverifiable, but what he's doing is he's going out there and he's painting a picture. He said it in the first answer to the question that was asked. He said it was like a movie. He's painting a picture of a U.S. president who is not messing around on the foreign stage as the media and as the Democrats are portraying him. And it shows, it gives the American people, especially ahead of an election year, it gives the American people a cause to be assured that their commander-in-chief is actually getting things done. And that's what offends them most. You know, his coarse language and things like that, yeah, fine. It upsets them. They're not repeating it at their dinner parties, right? But more than anything, what's offending them is that it's still his policies are working.
But here's the thing, too. You should also, and I want to tie together Brexit in 2016. Raheem Kassam, you're listening to War Room Impeachment on the John Fredericks Radio Network and on our podcast. You can go to warroom.org and see all the information. Raheem Kassam and Jason Miller are my wingmen on this. Raheem ran basically UKIP with Nigel Farage. He was the chief strategist. He was chief operating officer over there. Then was the head of the campaign. He was essential to the whole Brexit movement. But you see the same thing in England. You see the same thing that's happening in this whole, you know, on this Thursday, your beloved country, Raheem, is supposed to be out of the EU. It won't happen. But one of the things you see is Nigel Farage and the Brexiteers offend the BBC. Their very presence and their very style is offensive to the media class and to the kind of awfully awfullies in the city of London and the corporatists, just like President Trump's style. Just like President Trump's followers and his believers offend the established order here in the United States.
Well, that's it. And not only does it offend them because of their style, but to bring it back, it offends them because the public realizes that they were sold a pup. You know, all of this stuff about how the global order and crony capitalism, and obviously they're not calling it those sorts of things, but those things were supposed to make everyone better off. Immigration was fine. Don't worry about it. You know, you can just pay your au pairs less now because they're coming over from Poland. All of this kind of stuff that they've been pushing for so long is getting rampant and radical pushback from the ordinary public. And with the same with Trump, as with Nigel Farage, as is happening all over the rest of the world now, in Poland, in Italy, in Brazil, You're seeing it everywhere. Bringing the public back in and bring, you know, they use the term populist as a pejorative, as if listening to the people was a bad thing. Bringing the people back in is what these guys at their Georgetown cocktail parties lament the most, more than anything. I cannot stress that enough. But Steve, you know, I was taking some notes here throughout the announcement, and President Trump is still up there answering questions, which, to be honest, I didn't expect he would do. You know, I thought he would go up there, read a brief statement, and get out. He's giving a full on press conference right now. This may carry on for the next hour. But as we said, does this show that the White House is now taking a more aggressive approach to dealing with the press? This is the Sunday shows. This is prime time on a Sunday. This sets the narrative for the
you
week.
You know, they're talking about people like Tony Sayegh coming in, and yep. Tony's a very experienced guy. Tony ran communications for Secretary Mnuchin at Treasury during the tax cut. Very sophisticated guy, very smart guy.
Yep.
This is the type of thing you would think that Tony would definitely advocate, and completely, because it takes over the whole news cycle. It shows, and it also, I think, in a deep level, shows the difference that the President of the United States is the Commander-in-Chief. He's in charge of American national security policy. He's in charge of American foreign policy, and his policies are working, and this is another example of it. And that's why I can tell the audience right now, in the control rooms at CNN and NBC and ABC, George Stephanopoulos, their heads are blown up right now. This is not what they wanted Sunday morning to be. They wanted Sunday morning to be a complete beatdown of the testimony that they have leaked. They have taken, they've tweeted out. They've taken small sayings from this testimony, weaponized it, leaked it out, and that's what these Sunday shows are going to be. It was just a litany of, you know, orange man bad, that President Trump is evil, he's incompetent, and he's impeachable, and that they're saying the narrative for that. Raheem, we've only got so much time today on War Room Impeachment. I do want to go through yesterday's testimony, because you called it on the Saturday show of essentially what was going to happen. I want to summarize briefly yesterday's testimony, talk about the week's testimony, and then let's talk about where we're going to go forward this week with testimony.
That's right. We have about 15 minutes left here on the show, and there's a lot to get through. Steve, Philip Rieker was the one who went up there yesterday, and he's the Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs. Again, one of these people, Yale guy, former ambassador to Macedonia, very much appreciated in amongst his diplomat colleagues. I read the quote from Daniel Freed yesterday. He's a workhorse, not a showboat. He comes from the Masha Yovanovitch School of Professionalism. That was the former Ukrainian ambassador that was ousted, as the political establishment have said. We like to think of it as the president and the State Department being able to pick their own ambassadors. Shock, horror. That's kind of the way it's always worked. But hey, she was ousted. And also said of Rieker yesterday, he's a capable.
Is that
nice.
An impeachable? By the way, Raheem, that is that an impeachable offense?
Yes, apparently it is. Replacing your ambassadors is now an impeachable offense.
A career State Department person for somebody else, is that is that a high crime and misdemeanor? Is that what the revolutionary generation thought it was, a high crime and misdemeanor?
Well, this is what we're getting to now. You know, we've discussed this on the show, and I want to just recap real fast on what you just said, because it's incredibly important people recognize this. This last week was supposed to be the big week for the Democrats. They had Bill Taylor, they had, you know, their star witness. Remember, 24 hours in advance, star witness, star testimony. This is the big guy coming out there. He's going to connect all the dots. He's going to be the one that gets this president impeached. Not only did Bill Taylor's testimony collapse after you actually read and get into the 15 pages where it transpires no quid pro quo, no quid pro quo, no quid quo pro, it's a tongue twister, all those times over in the testimony, but also what happened the next day, you had Matt Gaetz and the cadre of Republican congressmen there storming of the skiff in the basement of Capitol Hill. Very important to shift the news cycle, shift the news narrative.
You also had Mark Meadows come out after the Taylor situation and said, hey, I sat through all 7 hours. And not one thing he say about no quid pro quo, but he also, in his demeanor and his testimony, there's essentially nothing there. And remember, Raheem, both the New York Times and the Washington Post buried Meadows' eyewitness account down in paragraph 12.
Yes, yes. And that's why these Sunday shows for, like you say, these producers, these guys, all the way up to the management, are sitting there right now, wringing their hands.
Jeff Zucker's not having a good Sunday morning. No, he's not having a good Sunday morning.
Wringing their hands that they have to cover this instead of slamming the president and selectively picking out the selectively leaked parts of selective parts of testimony by selective witnesses over the course of the last week. That's what the plan was for today. Trump and this White House have stepped all over it, and by the way, the substantive part of it have killed the ISIS leader al-Baghdadi. Now, let's move on to what you asked me about, Philip Rieker, who testified yesterday in a very rare Saturday deposition here on Capitol Hill. A lot of people were saying this is going to be very quick. It's going to be over fast. I've made some predictions this week. I'm going to continue to make them until I get them wrong, Steve. I was right. It was a nearly 9-hour testimony. Steve, as somebody who's been through similar things to that, how hard is a 9-hour testimony?
9 hours tough. I was up there for a couple of, I was up there, I think, for 2 12-hour ones, but 9 hours tough. I mean, when 9 hours, it's a proctology exam. I mean, they're going through a lot of stuff. So anybody that said that he was not, you know, I'm not saying he's a key witness. In fact, Mark Meadows came out and tweeted that all he was is on, he was an info ad on a bunch of emails. But for 9 hours, they are going through, they're trying to find any nugget they can find to try to tie the president to some illegal activity. So this 9 hours is a lot, and 9 hours is tough.
It's not just about what Rieker knows, what these people necessarily know firsthand. As we saw from page 9, and ladies and gentlemen, I cannot stress to you enough, I will say it till I'm blue in the face, I will say it till Christmas, and I'll say it beyond. If you read only one thing this week, if you read only one thing related to what you think the Democrats are doing, trying to do, read that Taylor testimony. It's 15 pages, won't take you very long. Page 9 of that testimony establishes that a lot of the things that Taylor was being told was second, third, fourth party rumors, scuttlebutt, water cooler chat. And that's what they're trying to get out of these guys. You know, Rieker may have been copied in a couple of emails, and that's fine. He doesn't know anything directly. But what? Maybe he heard something in a hallway one time. Maybe he saw an expression on someone's face. I'm not making light, Steve, when I say that. There's a part of the Taylor testimony where he says that he saw the face of one of Zelensky's advisors and knew that something was up. That is unbelievable to have as testimony in a Capitol Hill deposition, as so far as it concerns an impeachment of an elected president of the United States. You want to hang it on someone's facial expression in a meeting in Ukraine 2 months ago? This is what they're going after. So Rieker's testimony, far from being just, hey, you know, let's check out these little emails and you'll be gone in 35, 40 minutes. He sat up there for 9 hours as people tried to tease things out of him. And that's very important, not least when you consider what's going to happen over the next week, because you've also got more depositions coming up. Some people trying not to, as you know, Charles Kupperman, the former deputy national security advisor, taking legal advice on whether or not he can or cannot testify, due to testify tomorrow morning at 9:30 originally, Tuesday.
Kupperman's very important. Not only he was acting national security advisor after Bolton either resigned or was fired, but he is now going to, I guess, to court, and Judge Luttig, who would have been a Supreme Court justice, people talk about on the short list, said that his case could be one of the most important cases in American history about the separation of powers.
That's absolutely right. President Trump's still taking questions up there, saying that he'd known about this for 3 days, this Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi raid, and it's quite the development. He's going in at length on this. Steve, how much does this eat into this news cycle? Because as I say, we've got Kupperman supposedly Monday, Tuesday 9:30 a.m. supposed to be Alexander Vindman, the White House National Security Council's top expert.
Vindman's a very important witness.
Steve, why is Vindman so important?
Well, Vindman, I think he and his brother are part of the National Security Council. His brother's a lawyer in the National Security in the White House Counsel's office. Vindman, I actually think is of Ukrainian descent.
That's right.
And is an army officer involved in Ukrainian policy. And like we said, as we develop the show over the next couple of weeks, what you're going to see is policy differences. Policy differences on way the permanent bureaucracy thinks that policy should be undertaken, and policy as the commander in chief and Donald J. Trump thinks it should be. And you see today, as we're here at the Sunday show on War Room impeachment, President Trump's addressing the nation on, you know, his fundamental pledge to the American people to eradicate ISIS, and particularly to eradicate the physical caliphate. And you remember this, Raheem, when al-Baghdadi would get up there, and he was the driver of the physical caliphate. He was really the king in the imperial dictator of the caliphate. You know, President Obama, and you remember this, Raheem, told us it was going to be generational. I mean, he stood at the microphone at the White House and said the fight against ISIS, and particularly this physical caliphate that it set up between Iraq and Syria, was going to be a generational struggle. And President Trump said, hey, how about this? How about it takes a couple of years, and we're going to get very focused, bring all military sources to resources to bear, and to actually physically destroy it.
I remember very vividly. He stood up there in 2015, 2016. He said, we're going to knock the hell out of them. And that's exactly what's happened. This goes back to my point about this delineation now between the White House being able to point to what President Trump is doing and say he is getting on with the business of government. He is getting on with the things that people elected him to do. And this is a major, major change in terms of the White House comms strategy over the last week or so. But, Steve, I want to bring back just not necessarily, we don't need to get into the detail necessarily right now, because there's so much to talk about these guys, and there's about 10 minutes left on the show here. But Alex Vindman, you have on Tuesday, right? And this is somebody who, as you say, him and his brother in the NSC, I believe firsthand
and he's,
knowledge
and he's
of the supposed
he's specifically,
call.
I believe he's specifically in charge of a Ukrainian, the policy at the NSC. You're going to see, look, Fiona Hill, Vindman, Vindman's brother, these other people, this is all part of a unit, a working group at the NSC that has been, it's kind of this Russia-Ukrainian, Eastern Europe desk at the NSC that have been working this problem for many, many years, I would say with limited success. And then you've got President Trump and President Trump's attitudes towards things that are, I think, quite different.
Inheriting that situation, as you know, Steve, I was in Kiev in late 2013 when the Maidan protests were going on, and watched firsthand the way the pro-EU forces, the Obama policy people, McCain.
Well, described, I think it's very important, and you're an eyewitness to this, and of course you and Nigel, and look, some of the populist parties over there have been, you know, one of the smears that the EU throws out, that Brussels throws out at the populist parties, whether it's Le Pen in France, Salvini in Italy, Nigel Farage in the United Kingdom, is a difference in philosophy about this whole region of the world. Why don't you go back to 2013 when you were there and describe what the difference are between the Obama policy and other things that were happening?
Look, I went honestly with almost no knowledge about what was going on the ground in Ukraine. It was an incredible thing to watch the scenes on television and realize that within a couple of hours flight from Heathrow Airport was a major revolution taking place. And a colleague of mine and I, we looked at it and we said, well, look, when in our lifetimes we're going to be able to get to see something like this firsthand. And we got on a plane and we flew to icy cold Kiev, you know, minus 40 degree temperatures, the wind sweeping through the streets. But it was fascinating to watch, because you had a revolution with, you know, the trash cans on fire and people huddled around, and the EU flags flying, and McCain on the stage being flanked by members of Svoboda, a neo-Nazi party, but who just happened to stand side by side.
Why was John McCain there?
Well, this is the thing. I'm going to get to this, but I want to first paint the picture of just, you know, you had people welding into the street barricades so that the government forces couldn't come in and sweep the protesters away between H&M and a Starbucks. You know, it was a very sort of metropolitan protest that was taking place. It was a very pro-EU protest. It was a very pro and friendly Obama protest. And what was happening behind the scenes was this attempt to shift Ukraine from being traditionally a buffer state between Europe and Russia into a fully fledged European Union, if not member state, at least affiliate member state. For the people that are slightly nerdy about this, as I very much am, remember it, that at this very same time, you had a policy discussion going on about how Ukraine could be brought in to some of the EU treaties, brought into some of the EU institutions, and there was a document that was being ratified at the time. So all of this was a fight, basically, to amass the EU onto and NATO onto Russia's borders rather than to keep the Ukraine as a buffer state. Now, that was a policy position, and you know, presidents are allowed to take policy positions, and the EU is allowed to take its own policy position. But that was a policy position that has really created this whole nightmare. And the reason I wanted to mention that was because you said these guys, the Vindmans, all these guys at the desk, you said to they haven't had the greatest amount of success with this. I agree. What they inherited was a cluster. It was a cluster of epic proportions that nobody had thought through. Nobody had thought that the Russians would necessarily fight back. Nobody thought that Crimea would be annexed. They thought they had Russia on the back foot, and now they're having to mop up this. And, you know, there's a serious element, a more serious element to this than just a policy dispute. Tens of thousands of people have died as a result of what took place, sponsored by the European Union and John McCain and Barack Obama in 2013. And nobody ever talks about that. Nobody ever talks about the culpability of taking a buffer country and trying to subsume it into a NATO European Union thing with almost no planning behind it, Steve.
This is one of the great things that War Room impeachment and our warroom.org is going to add, is the context of exactly what is going on. Raheem's going to be writing this up and put into context. How do we actually get
Sunday
here?
Assignment.
What were the paths that led to the call on the 25th of July of 2019 that has now become essentially a world historical event? You know, a call that took place at 9 a.m. What were the paths that led us there? Why was it so important? Why was there so much resistance to President Trump? Why did President Trump have a different attitude about what should take place? Why did he have, quite frankly, he did have an off the books, which all presidents have. You know, FDR in World War II had 50 off the books programs going at any one time. What was Rudy Giuliani going on? Where was Mike Pompeo's role in all this? We're going to be getting into detail, because once you contextualize it and get it away from the kind of, you know, this agonizing, you know, everything's so urgent, everything's so huge. Ambassador Taylor's testimony is so ginormous, right, that she actually impeach a sitting president of the United States off of William Taylor's testimony. It's so important. We're going to contextualize all this day in and day out, and Raheem is a perfect person to do it since he was an eyewitness to the facts that kind of got this rolling back in 2013. Raheem, you want to quickly summarize, we've got a few minutes left, about the coming week. Besides Vindman, who else is up? And every day, live from 9 to 10 on War Room Impeachment, we will be here on the John Fredericks Radio Network and on podcast platforms throughout the country to be able to bring this to you.
I want people to recognize, Steve, that this president is being impeached because of the policy failures of the last president, okay? And the policy failures of the last president, coupled with some of the more, let's say, hawkish or neoconservative Republicans out there like John McCain and his cadre of people that supported Obama time and time again, this president is now suffering from that. And we at warroom.org will do a whole thing about how we got to this place. But it is important to note, we've said multiple times now over the course of the last week, this is effectively a policy dispute that's taking place. But what policy? So we'll break that down over the course of the next week and on the site warroom.org. Steve, you've got Charles Kupperman, maybe tomorrow at 9:30 a.m. We're still waiting to see if he actually is going to testify. Tuesday, Alex Vindman, which will be a very important one, because what did Alex Vindman say about that call between President Trump and President Zelensky? What did he say, and who did he say it to? That's something to watch out for.
Vindman and Morrison, I think, become, particularly with regards to the whistleblower, I think, who was not the White House at the time, I think Vindman and Morrison become very important. Their testimony becomes very important, and that's why we want to have a thorough cross-examination, particularly in the public forum.
Well, that's the big one. Thursday, 8 a.m., Tim Morrison, Russia and Europe advisor, National Security Council. What did Vindman say? What did Morrison hear? These are the things we're going to be paying attention to. These people inextricably linked, and I believe it's these people, this little cadre, and their policy dispute with the President of the United States that has caused all of this. If you thought last week was explosive, there's a lot more to come, and we're going to be covering it all here on War Room Impeachment.
Yes, this is the the intensity of this, and we now know that there may be they're hurtling towards a vote in the House, it looks like, before Thanksgiving to pass it to the Senate to have a trial before Christmas. But there's some discussion already that I think they realize, given this week, that they're going to have to develop this more thoroughly. So the Washington Post is reporting this morning, very preliminary, it's not, nothing set, but there's already grumbling among the Democrats that Gates's efforts are going to force them to go public, so they're going to have public hearings. They don't know how they're going to finish.
Steve,
don't know how they're going to finish.
That's the music. Stephen K. Bannon on assignment in New York. I've been Raheem Kassam here at the desk on Capitol Hill. This has been War Room Impeachment on the John Fredericks Radio Network, available at warroom.org. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us here again today. We'll be back tomorrow, 9 a.m., War Room Impeachment.
WJFN, 100.5 FM, Goucher and Richmond.
Real news, real talk.